Welcome to Marketing Tips for Translators, a podcast with marketing and business tips and strategy specifically for freelance translators and interpreters. I'm your host, Tess Whitty, a longtime freelance translator with an education and professional background in marketing. Tune in to hear tips from my own experience or from other translators and industry experts. Hello and welcome to episode 230 of the Marketing Tips for Translators. I hope you're all doing well today. In this episode, we are switching the angle a little bit. Instead of talking about how translators can market to clients, we will talk about how translation companies market to translation buyers in general. What do translation pros get right and wrong about how we communicate when we talk about our services to the rest of the world? This sounds very intriguing, right? With me, I have a chief marketing officer for one of the largest translation companies in the world. But before I introduce him and dive into this episode, I want to give a shout out to one of the listeners. And this one comes from Aliona in Russia. She says, "My favorite podcast. Tons of useful information for any translator working on their own. How to promote your services, how to find good clients, how to deal with complaints, and so much more. Tess always asks her guests for specifics, like how exactly they do things, and it's very, very helpful in a practical way. I can actually apply their advice to practice after listening to the podcast. Also, Tess always invites great professionals to every guest, so every guest is worth listening to. I recommend this awesome podcast to every translator." Thank you so much, Aliona. You've made my day. Making the podcast and publishing over 220 episodes is hard work, but one of my passion projects. So I'm very grateful that you took the time to tell me and others about how it has helped you. But now back to the topic, how translation companies market to translation buyers. I would like to welcome the Chief Marketing Officer of Lionbridge to the podcast. Welcome to the podcast, Jamie Ponichil.
Thanks so much, Tess. Super happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you on the call. I'm glad we got this to work out. You have quite the track record, and it's an honor to have you here.
Thank you so much.
So tell us a little bit first about yourself and your career in the translation industry specifically.
Well, as I, you know, I'm relatively new to the business. I spent most of my career in the financial services industry and really have lived at the epicenter of the digital translation or the digital transformation rather universe. Mm-hmm. And a few years ago, I had the opportunity to learn a little bit more about the localization business and in the course of the Lionbridge opportunity. And almost exactly 2 years ago, I joined Lionbridge as their CMO as part of the new group after the HIG acquisition.
Okay. And for people who have been under a rock, what's the HIG?
That's a good point. Yeah. So as many people might know, you know, Lionbridge was a publicly traded company for much of its existence. Mm-hmm. And a few years ago, they were taken private by a private equity firm that goes by HIG. And obviously, there's been a lot of change since then, a lot of new management team. Most of us from outside the translation and localization business have joined to help take Lionbridge to the next level and enjoy the next level of growth in our business.
Okay. But you have, well, we will include your bio in the show notes, but you have quite the track record before that, too, in marketing.
Both in marketing and really, like I said, the crux of my experience has been the digital transformation business. I started, as I mentioned, in financial services and the brokerage business, and as a 25-year-old, I had a chance to build the first online brokerage for Bank of America, really just because I was 25 and it was the mid-90s and 25-year-olds understood the internet and not many other people did. And so I really lived through, you know, watching industries go through technology-driven changes, which might sound familiar for this industry for sure. Mm-hmm. And over time, that led me into the marketing universe, which is obviously undergoing its own big technology and digital transformation. And so in that way, it's a lot of, you know, very similar attributes to what's going on inside of translational localization.
Okay, good. So for Lionbridge then, when you work for Lionbridge now for 2 years, if we talk about marketing, how does Lionbridge market to translation buyers? I mean, they've been doing it for a long time. Has anything changed, and how does it work?
Yeah, no. So I think, you know, well, there's the tactical things that we have that we've done, like, you know, Lionbridge, like so many LSPs, is really the product of lots of mergers and acquisitions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I won't chronicle them because I think lots of folks know them. But, you know, we grew both organically and inorganically over the last 25 years. And one of the first tasks was really trying to rationalize that so that we were, you know, presenting ourselves to the market as a single company, a single entity, you know, a unified brand. And we had many, many brands and sub-brand attributes and different, you know, ways in which we were represented across the globe. You know, as a function of the different acquisitions. And so, you know, our first step was really to get to the essence of who we were and consolidate around a single brand and a single message. So we did that, and lots of folks might have noticed that. You know, if you look at our digital presence, if you look at our presence at, you know, events like Local World and Taos and what have you, we have a very, very different look and feel to our universe. So that was the piece. The next piece is really to try to understand how buyers buy. And is there something in the way in which the industry communicates its value proposition that would be different? And that's really, I think, where, you know, we've spent a lot of time in the last year trying to understand, you know, how do competitors, how do translators, how do LSPs position themselves. And, you know, you might know if you go to any of our websites, you know, everybody's got the same four words. We all say that we deliver quality. We all say that we deliver speed. We all talk many, many languages that we offer. Many companies talk about their scale. If you think about it from a buyer's perspective, it makes it very difficult to differentiate between any given player. But part of it, I think, is a bigger discussion, which is, you know, how do localization professionals generally position themselves and present themselves to business buyers, folks who don't come from this business? And that's where I think there's a really interesting opportunity and challenge for the industry.
I would like to hear about that one, because that is what at least freelance translators are struggling with, is to communicate how we are different compared to everybody else.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, boy, that one's got a lot of layers to it, because that'll be different for every person. But, you know, clearly, you know, an independent contractor, you know, versus an agency versus an LSP. Those are all different even before you get into the differences between any given agency or translator or, content creator or LSP. But I think even at a higher level, and, you know, lots of folks know this, you know, localization departments in a lot of organizations are also challenged to position themselves for budget, to have a strategic seat at the table in the way the company thinks about its global expansion. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think there's, you know, a pivot point that the industry is at, where, and this is not the first industry to go through this, but it's where, you know, really think about differently about how it positions what we do in, more in the way in which we impact the outcomes of the business, right? You know, so I think about it this way. There's a, if you were to poll any board of directors at any large company, global expansion, global revenue generation is not in the top five. It's in the top 10 of things that they're trying to achieve. And so if that's true, why are we not one of the most strategic parts, players in supporting global expansion, right, as an industry? And again, whether you're an individual translator or an LSP, I think we all face the same challenges. Shouldn't we have a much more strategic seat at the table?
Wouldn't you say it's just that they don't understand the importance of it?
And then I would say, whose fault is that?
Because I have to educate some of my end clients too. They can spend so much money on their original English copy, and then they are trying to get the translation just cheap and fast.
That's right. And that, you know, in a nutshell, encapsulates the challenge. And to me, I mean, there's so many reasons why I think this might be true, but I think if you boil it down to its essence, and you know, you can see it in some of the many terms we use in our industry. There are many, many companies who operate globally, but there aren't many, many companies who think globally. And who, you know, so if you think about it, if you're a company, you know, a large tech company, when you release the code, it hits hundreds of millions or billions of people at once, right? You know, a Google, a Facebook, an Apple, a Microsoft, and, you know, insert name here. All 7.7 billion people on this planet are potential customers. And in the universe, it's flat. We don't even have boundaries and borders in the same way we have in the physical universe. And that's a very different way of thinking about your go-to-market strategy and how you communicate than really how we did it in the industrial economy, where it was really rooted in physical presence. So you think about worlds in the physical way. You know, you go from town to town, state to state, country to country. You don't launch to the planet all at once. I mean, it's fascinating when you think about it. If you launch a website, you literally, the world is your customer. Whether you wanted it to or not.
Right? Yeah.
And yet people still haven't put two and two together to say, great, well, now how am I communicating with 7.7 billion people in 7,000 languages?
Mm-hmm. So to go back a little bit to the marketing then, right now, how are we marketing? And is it just what is not working is the positioning, or how did you mean?
No, I think it's a good question. I think it happens at a couple of levels. If you think about the way an RFP might come to you, or a buyer might come to you, or you think about the way most of us describe our services, and even how we price our services, we spend an awful lot of time talking about the factory and the process. Price per word. Really go after quality measures. We focus on turnaround times. We're really thinking about the production, right, of a localization, whether it's, you know, digital copy or, a physical asset or a website or, you know, an experience, what have you. And where everything is about the widgets and the process. Go back to the nature of the question you had before, which is, how do I sell more stuff in Germany or in, what would my revenue lift be, or how many fewer calls would I get to my call center if I had native content for that buyer, and have to call up to try to get an answer to their question. their NPS or their customer experience score improve if we spoke to them in their native language, not in their learned or adopted language. And you can keep going through these lists. These are the business outcomes, right, that ultimately are what drive investment if you're in one of our potential buyers. And that ROI conversation, improving the value of the activity that we have and then tying our activity to that, that's what the missing link is, if you ask me.
So we should talk more value and results and less factory.
Yeah. And I think part of the reason we do that is, you know, so many of the people in this business, I'm not one of them. We're linguists, you know, we study language, we study linguistics, the art, the craftsmanship, the expertise required to do the actual work is quite difficult, and we love it and we have passion for it. And that's different than the business of translation and localization and the outcome of the activity. And that's where I think part of the gap is. As a marketer is a good example, you know, what I care about when I'm thinking about my multilingual website is that my SEO produces better efforts than, you know, my transcreated German assets perform better than my translated German assets perform better than my English assets do in Germany. And that's, yeah. Right? That's all I care about. That I translated or transcreated is in some sense irrelevant. It simply was, does it perform better? And actually, that's a really good example because we're doing this ourselves as part of the rebrand. We redid our entire digital experience, and we're literally systematically going through right now and assessing everywhere. Where do I need native content, natively content for that market and those buyers? Where can I transcreate the, you know, because obviously most of our content's created in English first. And where do I translate? Because that is effective enough that it isn't worth the extra effort and expense of transcreating or of native content creation. And that's a science and a discipline to see that value. As a marketer, I do that naturally. Mm-hmm. I apply to the language business, and that's a new dimension. That's no different than if I was marketing in English. I'd be running the same A-B test. Does this copy or that copy work better?
Mm-hmm.
If you think about that, you know, 3 or 4 minute description I just made, that's not a conversation I hear almost anybody having in this industry, mm-hmm. right? We think about how translations impact the business in some way, shape, or form and say, great, you're going to sell more if you do this. And let me show you how.
So how can we move translation and localization up in priority then among the, what should I say, management team?
Yeah, it's a fantastic question, and I can't reveal all my secrets. I spent a lot of time thinking about that for us. But let me give you a parallel that you know relates to my history and that I think the world is going through right now as well. That might be useful. Digital and the emergence of the internet as a medium to interact with customers and ultimately to sell stuff to people.
Mm-hmm.
Has gone through and continues to go through exactly the same journey, right? Was it just a thing? Was it something you added on to the rest of your business? Mm-hmm. Think Barnes & Noble or Blockbuster. Does it do something more fundamental to the industry at large? And how have folks who've been doing digital, how have they systematically moved from being sort of a team in the corner fighting for budget or attention or value to now, again, being part of board conversations where there isn't a major global 2000 firm that doesn't have a board level initiative around digital transformation and really looking at themselves and saying, wow, this could fundamentally change our products, our pricing, the way we interact with customers. This could threaten us. This could create new opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
How did they do that? And what if you go back and you look at it systematically over time, the digital universe has collected lots of data, and it showed people who interact with us here buy more. People who interact with us here make more. People who interact with us here buy faster. And I'm picking those, you could add, there could be all kinds of metrics. But we've proven the value of the activity to the end result of the business. And over time, what you get is more and more business leaders looking at that and saying, wow, if I adopt that, I will be more successful. I will sell more. Mm-hmm. This is really not so different. And you know, I'll give a shout out to you know, my former colleague, Don DePalma at CSA, because, you know, Don has been saying this, I'm sure. But, well, you know, the truth is Don was saying it when he was at Forrester with me in the 90s. And I bet others have, too, even before it created CSA. This is a strategic business function, and we've got great value of it. And you can see it in the CSA stats, right? If you look at Can't Read, Won't Buy, which, you know, is a couple of years old now. But you can see it systematically, how many people won't repeat buy if the support isn't in their native language? How many people won't buy at all you know, the product isn't in the language? We don't spend enough time focusing on that and driving that discussion. We will instead spend a lot of time debating what the right translation is, right process, or whether or not we should use machine translation.
Yeah, so we should focus more on the, like, getting the buyer's perspective across by providing data and proof of the value that localization can bring.
That is the magic, right? If we're going to change the, if we're going to sell to different people other than localization managers who have exactly the same, they just have a different version of the dynamic, right? Mm-hmm. They themselves either aren't or are struggling to make the same case to their senior management. Mm-hmm.
So if you can provide it to them, it makes it easier.
Yeah, I think it isn't just that it makes it easier. I think if we want to grow this industry and elevate it from an activity to a strategic asset, it is incumbent upon us to help change the perception of the activity. And people say, wow, this is the only way you can go to market. Mm-hmm. I go with a fully globalized view where I sit down and part of my strategy assumes we're going out in 10 markets. Let's make sure that everything we do accommodates those 10 markets, right? For those, you know, for translators who work on digital assets, you know this. The way you write copy for the web, the way you even code your templates is quite different if you know you're going to do it in 10 languages, right? If I know I have English and Arabic, and so I've got to accommodate, you know, language direction, character direction, right? Or character expansion sizes, right? I code the page, how I write the even original copy has got to be different to make the translation process easier. But most people, to your point, they don't think about that. They start with the English and then say, great, now do something to it to make it work in German.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So where does the actual translator come into play here? What are our roles in the sort of supply chain? Does it change? Is it the same? Are we going to be replaced by machines? What do you think?
Well, so let me start with the last question, which is a categorical no. History is replete with these examples. And when people talk about this stuff, I am very fond of using this particular, you know, example. Walk by any construction site today, and you will still see people running around with hard hats and picking shovels. Mm-hmm. Now, 100 years ago, you would have seen 1,000 of them, those people. Today, you might see 100. And next to them are big old earth-moving machines, and, you know, hydraulically powered, et cetera. So there's a lot that the earth movers and the cranes, et cetera, can do that we used to see lots of people for. Mm-hmm. But you still see people there, right there next to those machines, making them work. That last mile, that fit and finish. And, oh, by the way, there's hundreds of thousands of people who have to design those tractors and those backhoes and those cranes, who build them, who market them and sell them. And so, no, humans are not going anywhere. Will the nature of the work change? Absolutely. Will the way in which we work change? You sure bet. As it happens, stockbrokers and travel agents and librarians and any profession, right? I mean, there's a sort of an inexorable march of technology that changes how things get done. But in the end, you know, language is, you know, it's not a math equation. It's not an exact science. Mm-hmm. Heck, you've got marketers like me breaking the English language to be creative. Never mind the many ways you could translate that. And so I think the incredible creativity and expertise that makes for a really fantastic translator, that never goes away, because that is something that is uniquely human and explicitly difficult for machines to emulate. But the real brute force activities, and frankly, a lot of the activities that I bet if we got a translator over a glass of wine to talk about what they don't like to do, translate the same paragraph over and over and over, why are you sending me the same copy, et cetera. Like, nobody actually likes to do it. But because we charge by the word, there's a little bit of a disconnect between how we think about that work and whether or not we really think we're adding value.
It's like I say, there's no reason I need to translate all the names of the countries in the world anymore.
Exactly.
Manually.
That's right, unless you plan on renaming them.
Exactly.
Which I wish you good luck to. Maybe they should be, but you're right. I think it's a fantastic way of expressing it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and look, machine translation is just the latest, or NMT is just the latest of a bevy of translation tools,
yes.
Right, and project management tools that have come along that have helped to improve the efficiency and speed and scale of this industry. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that that the humans are going anywhere. So everybody should feel good about that. But that doesn't mean that there isn't change afoot in how we do things and approach things and talk about things doesn't need to change.
What about our role in the supply chain?
I'm not 100% sure I understand exactly the question the way you mean it. I guess I'll try with, and then you can tell me if I got it. I think in the end, when we look at this, our community is such a vital part of the ecosystem, because in the end, that is where the rubber meets the road. So much of what, we are facilitating is the relationship between, buyers and translators, the project management, finding the right translator. It's, look, it's a lot like Uber. And our CEO talks about this a lot, what the role Uber plays is to match the customer with the supplier. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's a lot of, what LSPs do. And so I don't know that necessarily changes, but clearly, right, industry expertise, marketing expertise, the things, if you think about it, that are that added value that take the transition and help it turn into the business outcome. I think those will probably become even more important. They come together, because that's how you're going to drive business outcomes.
Well, if we take the construction site analogy again, the translator, if there were 1,000 construction workers before, and now there's 100, those others have been replaced by machines. But you still need those hundreds, but they have more of an expertise or expert role, right?
I think that's right, partially. Those people who are no longer holding the pickaxes and the shovels, mm-hmm. also be sitting in the driver's seat of that backhoe. And by the way, those guys are paid pretty well. They might have gotten a job on the factory floor to construct the backhoe. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good job,
okay.
And so forth. So, that's one way it might happen. The other way it might happen is when you add the technology, and this is true in most industries, you don't see jobs go away so much as the industry picks up so much more volume.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That you're doing 10x with the same amount of people.
Yes, the demand for translations these days is much, much higher than any human translator can provide.
That's right. And only going up, right? The rate of content production on the internet is, we're starting to use numbers that I can't even pronounce.
Okay.
you know, new pieces of content, new words, new minutes of video added, you know, every hour. And if you think about the content production rate, it's a staggering increase, which should theoretically just increase the demand for all kinds of different applications of linguistic knowledge and language knowledge. And some of that might be quite different, as we've seen, right? It might be in transcription. It might be in data annotation, be in, you know, computer vision analysis. There's all kinds of new ways that language skills, language knowledge, linguistic knowledge, et cetera, can be applied other than just words being put from one language into another.
Mm-hmm. If we go back to the marketing part now again, and the messaging, should the translators and the translation companies or language service providers have the same message to the buyers?
Well, that's a fantastic question. I don't know if it's exactly the same message, but I think it has to be targeted against the same mission. I go back to, in the end, what we want is we want more companies to operate, to think globally, more of them to plan for the global production of content in all of its and experiences in all of its forms. And then we want to be there to help them figure out how do they think about content production differently. So of that, this might be an aside, but I think it relates to this. This is a good example. I was having this debate internally with one of our program, our project managers on the challenges of meeting deadlines with some of our customers. And one of the key issues was the customer's process for creating the original content before it even got to us. And that is a changing dynamic. We have to go back to the customers and say, hey, you know, we're not just creating content in English. We're creating it for a pick number of languages. Let's say it's 10 for this example. We have to rethink that process. Otherwise, we're never going to get to the same place. We're never, because the foundation, you can't take a foundation built for a 3-story house and put a 100-story skyscraper on top of it. You have to change the foundation. So if I'm going to design something for 10 languages, the entire creation of the source language has to be different. That's where I think the discussion has to be quite similar, is we all have to look at this and say, we need to help companies rethink the way they look at this. They will use us better. They will partner with us better. We will all be happier. And then we will all take advantage of these greater volumes.
But that is quite a difficult task, though, to explain to the customer that that they need to think about this earlier in the process and even integrate us earlier in the process if possible.
I have no doubt that it is difficult. It were easy, because I'm 1,000% sure I'm not the first person to think of this or suggest.
Yes.
But I will say this, going back to a question you asked me quite early, in a world where you want to differentiate yourself, and show how you're different than just another translator, that's what I'm focusing on. Because that truly is a differentiator. You're right. It is difficult. That requires a knowledge of the customer. That requires a knowledge of their business. That requires understanding. Think about this. You know, if you want to help me with my marketing and my marketing process, my entire content creation process is wired for English. Mm-hmm. You need to understand how a marketer might set up their content, their head of content and their content creation process, and then wise enough and experienced enough and knowledgeable enough to suggest a change in that process that would lead to more efficient, faster, better translation or localization. So quite often you see, in order to solve the problem you've got where you are in the supply chain, you've got to move one layer up in the supply chain.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's a good point. Okay. Anything else you would like to say about how translation companies market to translation buyers?
I don't think so. I think I just want to come back to, you know, the nature of some of the questions and a little bit of what we talked about. You know,
sure.
I think, you know, all of the business conditions suggest we're going to continue to see greater globalization, global commerce, and a greater import on language and linguistic skills in enabling that, right? Mm-hmm. And probably at a faster pace and higher volumes than any of us can even conceive today. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm right about that, and I think there's a lot of people who agree with that sentiment, then, wow, what an exciting opportunity for everybody in this industry. All of the conditions for lots more business and success are out in front of us. That doesn't mean that we don't have a bunch of work to help to take advantage of that opportunity. But the opportunity exists. And I think there's a really exciting set of opportunities for everybody out there. And so, you know, embracing some of the technology a little differently, thinking about how to make this a little bit more strategic and add some of these skills or perspectives, just puts us all in a position to take advantage of and really help the world go where the world is trying to go, which is a little flatter, a little bit more connected, more global.
Yep. Okay, so this is a question I usually ask everyone I have on these episodes. What marketing strategy works really well for Lionbridge now then? What strategy are you focusing on?
Well, I think, again, I can't give away the story here.
Why not?
but I think one of the things that I've been really focused on, both with my team and with the broader organization, is really helping them understand there's a different way that buyers buy in this universe, right? There's an inbound marketing universe. I was telling this to Tarina just before we got on the call. If you think the U.S. workforce is now about half millennial, that's a fancy way of saying, half the U.S. workforce is now under the age of 40. Mm-hmm. If you think about that, that is a group whose entire adult life, all they know is the way Google has organized information.
Yeah.
Right. They don't know the library. They don't look at information consumption that way. The entire modality is ask and respond. And so the way you market and communicate to folks is quite different. And then the way they buy, because we have so much access to information and education, is also quite different. So, we are very much focused on really putting out a lot of thought leadership and education. We have to share that where the buyers are, and the buyers are not necessarily at Lionbridge.com. I eventually want them there, but they're elsewhere. They're solving their problems. They might be marketers reading, a digital marketing blog or on some other content network. So I have to get the content where they are, bring them to a place like Lionbridge. Mm-hmm. Help them understand the business issues that we solve and the capabilities we have, and then connect them with some experts who can, help bring it home. And so that I think is that inbound, it's a fancy word for it is inbound marketing, marketing. But like that's a very different way of finding your buyers.
I'm so happy that you say that. I have full day workshops on inbound marketing or online presence optimization for translators. And I also have 1-hour presentations about this because, like you said, the buyer process has changed. We can't market by interruption anymore. We have to market by using a magnet.
That's right. That's right. And the truth is nobody really liked the interruption to begin with. So this is an opportunity to make them happy too. And so this is a lot about how we are thinking about, meet the buyer where they are, understand their issues, and help them understand how what we do helps them achieve their business objectives. Because again, they don't wake up thinking, how can I translate into German today?
Yeah.
They say, how can I sell more of this product, which probably has some portion of it. The sales are to German speakers, and then that's where our activity comes in. Interestingly enough, I think if more people thought about that inbound marketing, attended that seminar or things like at our workshop, and understood that, how much better would that person be able to then talk to a potential marketing buyer about how insulation would fit their buying cycle? So it would help actually understand the buying perspective and then how to position your services to those buyers.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thank you so much, Jamie, for this. I totally agree with you. The industry is changing, and we are ramping up to deal with such an increase in volume, and we are becoming more digitalized, and the marketing process has changed. So it's an exciting time. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show to talk about sort of more strategic ways and how sort of a more higher level up than I usually talk about when I talk to other freelance translators. So thank you, Jamie, for coming on to the call.
Well, thank you so much. It was my pleasure. I would be happy to come back anytime you'll have me.
Where can we find out more about you and Lionbridge?
Well, of course, you can go to lionbridge.com. And if I'm doing my job, hopefully you can find lots of things out about Lionbridge. Punishill is actually a made-up name. So if you Google Punishill, I'm pretty likely only to find me.
Okay. Did you make it up?
I did. That's probably a subject of an entirely other podcast. But yeah, perhaps it was portended my future in marketing. But there are only 4 Punishills in this universe. My children. Okay. And, so you can find information about me pretty easily.
And I would, of course, include your bio in the show notes, too.
That's fantastic. Yeah, but LinkedIn and Twitter, I'm in all the usual places.
Okay. Thank you so much for also to the listeners. I hope you enjoyed this higher level perspective of the marketing. For links to Lionbridge or to check out Jamie's bio or our sponsor, or even the inbound marketing workshop, please go to marketingtipsfortranslators.com/330 for more information and to add any comments or question you may have to me or Jamie. And thank you so much for listening and have a great week. Thank you for listening to Marketing Tips for Translators. I hope you found some good tips to apply to your freelance career. If you did, a great way to show this is by leaving a review on your favorite podcast listening app or to share the episode with other colleagues. Do you have a topic, question, or a guest you would like to hear about here? Send me an email to podcast@marketingtipsfortranslators.com.